We were discussing the issue of Halach Ma'anya. This is the bread of affliction. And it comes under the heading of Magid. Magid is the part of the Seder where you narrate the story of the Exodus. So the basic order is that the first thing you do when you get home on the night of Pesach is to recite Kiddush. As everybody is familiar, there's a difference in terms of Kiddush on the night of Pesach as opposed to any other holiday. And that is that on Shabbos or on a holiday, you don't have to wait till actual nightfall. For example, on the long days, the person begins Shabbos early, or even Yom Tov. If he begins the Yom Tov early, he can recite the Kiddush. However, on Pesach, he can begin the Yom Tov early. That's called Tosfos Yom Tov, to add on to the Yom Tov. That he can do. But he can't say the Kiddush until his actual nightfall. So, that's the first question. Why is the Kiddush of Pesach different than the Kiddush of all other nights? The classical answer is that the Kiddush on the night of Pesach is unique in that it is the first of the four cups of wine, the Dalet Kosos, which we're obligated to drink. But it's not just a mitzvah to drink four cups, because if a person just drank four cups one after the other, he would not fulfill the mitzvah in its entirety. But rather, each one of these four is related to a different aspect of the night. And the first one is related to Kiddush. So the Kiddush itself is a form of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. That is, he does fulfill a mitzvah to a certain extent of narrating the Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim by virtue of proclaiming the essence of the night, that the holiness of the night is such because on this night God took us out of Egypt. So Kiddush itself on this night is not just Kiddush for the sake of the sanctification of the day as a holiday, but it also does partake of the essential mitzvah of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's why it qualifies in terms of one of the four cups. And Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim has to be at night. But that we learn out from the Pasuk Bavur Zeh, that the entire Haggadah has to be said at the time when Matzah and Maror is before you. And of course the person might ask, well, okay, so why can't I start it earlier? I'll just have Matzah and Maror in front of me. The answer to that question is that from a physical standpoint, you can have Matzah in front of you, you can have Maror in front of you. But Matzah and Maror are not physical objects, they're halachic objects. It's a chefta shel mitzvah, it's an object which is used for a mitzvah. Now, it's not defined as an object of mitzvah outside of the time frame. If the person eats matzah today, it's not matzah. By matzah, I'm not referring to the physical object, I'm referring to the entity of mitzvah. When does it become an object of mitzvah? It becomes an object of mitzvah at the time when it's in effect. For example, lulav. You could have a lulav and an esrog today. But is that truly a lulav and an esrog in the halachic sense? No. For example, on the holiday, you can't use a lulav for any enjoyment, for any personal benefit, because it's designated for the mitzvah. That's true. That comes into effect only on Sukkos, when it's considered to be a chefta shel mitzvah. Throughout the rest of the year, it's not a lulav. It's just a palm branch. The same is true with the matzah. Throughout the rest of the year, it's just unleavened bread. But on Pesach, it becomes matzah, because now it's the time of the mitzvah. When it says that the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim has to be said over matzah and maror, it means over the entity of mitzvah, the chefta shel mitzvah of matzah and maror. The chefta shel mitzvah of matzah and maror doesn't come into existence until the time of the mitzvah. Other than that, before Pesach, it's just bitter herbs, it's lettuce, it's iceberg lettuce, whatever you use, ground horseradish. The question, however, can be raised on the basis of what I just said. Because what I'm saying is that it doesn't become matzah until the time of the mitzvah. This would seem at first glance to contradict something which we learned recently in the Gemara of Arvei Pesachim. We went to the Rambam, and the Rambam mentions that there is a prohibition of eating matzah on Erev Pesach the entire day. You're not allowed to eat matzah, the reason being so that there should be a heker. It should be noticeable, it should be recognizable that he's eating it for the sake of the mitzvah that night. And we went on to analyze the whole point, what the reason for that is. But nevertheless, by mere virtue of the fact that there is a prohibition, it would seem that there is an idea, concept of matzah, even before the time of the holiday. In terms of the prohibition, it doesn't matter that matzah before Pesach is not halachic matzah. They were talking about the same physical object, because you're talking in the framework of a heker. So by refraining from that object, which will constitute the Chefta Shel Mitzvah at the designated time, it will be clear that the eating of that object is for the sake of the mitzvah. So therefore it doesn't matter. The object that is being prohibited is the physical matzah. Because insofar as heker is concerned, it relates to the physical object. So therefore you refrain from engaging in the activity of eating that object for 24 hours prior to the time. By refraining and then doing it at the designated time, it's clear that the reason why you're doing it is for the sake of mitzvah, because on Pesach a person can be eating matzah not for the sake of mitzvah. I mean, it's ordinary food like any other food. Therefore there's no true contradiction. But in terms of this object assuming the status of Chefta Shel Mitzvah, that comes into being at night, and therefore the Kiddush has to be recited at the time that Matzah and Morah is in front of you. This takes us to Magid. Now once you finish with Kiddush, you go on to Magid. Now before Magid, what do? After the Kiddush, before Halach Ma'anya, you do Yachatz. He breaks the second matzah, or if you have three matzahs, then it's the third matzah. And one part he removes, and one part he retains with the other one or the other two, depending on our custom is to have three matzahs. Now, immediately after that, he begins Magid. And he uncovers the matzos, and he raises the plate with the matzah on it, and he says in a loud voice, Halach Ma'anya. This is the bread, I'll just translate according to the usual translation, this is the bread of affliction that our fathers ate in the land of Egypt. Whoever is hungry, let him come and eat. Whoever is in need, let him come and partake of the Pesach, the Passover sacrifice, the Korban Pesach. Now we are here. In the year to come, we will be in the land of Israel. Now we are slaves. In the year to come, we will be free people. Really problematical, because it seems to be a bunch of disjointed ideas. Each sentence seems to be a separate idea, and they're all extremely difficult to comprehend in their own right. For example, the very terminology, now we are slaves, seems to contradict the entire theme of what the Seder is all about. To the contrary, that God has taken us from slavery to freedom, and now we're free. The whole purpose of the night is to express freedom, to experience freedom, to demonstrate freedom. That's the four cups, a seva, reclining, everything is freedom. So what are we saying that now we are slaves? Also, it seems difficult. What are we saying? What do we mean when we're saying whoever is hungry, let him come and eat? And I think Jesse asked, is that a real invitation? No. It's a bit late to start inviting people. Who are you inviting? The people who are in front of you. Well, I assume that they're invited. Well, otherwise, they wouldn't be there. One part of the halacha makes sense, at least on a superficial level. The idea of halacha ma'anya per se, if we don't get into the specifics, makes sense to me because it's based upon a foundation, and the foundation is that the entire Haggadah is recited over matzah and morah. So therefore you're explaining a whole lot, this is the bread of affliction. You're explaining what matzah is. You're introducing everybody to matzah because you're not saying it in a vacuum. You're saying it in relation to these objects. Everything centers around the objects, and matzah is the main object. Chag hamatzos hazeh. So if that is the case, you're creating a bridge, a connection between the recitation of the story and the chesed shel matzah. That makes sense. And the fact that our fathers ate in the land of Egypt, matzah is ambivalent. Because matzah, on the one hand, reflects slavery and affliction. It's the bread of a poor man. It's minimal. Or because he doesn't have the time and the luxury to wait until it rises and leavens. It's poor bread, so to speak. On the other hand, it's a sign of the geula, of the redemption. So there's a lot of ambivalence in the chesed shel matzah. And that point on it gets difficult. This kol dechvin yeseh v'yechol, this invitation, whoever is hungry, let him come and eat. I mean, what does it have to do with the theme, anyways? That's a separate idea. What does it have to do with the theme of matzah? And it seems to be strange because who are you saying it to? Then the same thing, whoever needs the Pesach to come and join is also strange. Alright, the fact is that we don't have a Pesach today. Why is that retained? Why is that retained since we don't have a Pesach today? To me, that it's true it's not relevant today, but it's talking about the ideal situation. But if you take a look at the Rambam shows the differences with regard to the questions that the child asks at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, as opposed to now. Take a look at the Rambam. The Rambam lists the questions that are raised, the four questions, in terms of the situation when you have the Beis HaMikdash and you're reading the Karban, as opposed to now. So there's a difference between how we conduct the Seder in the time when we have the actual Karban Pesach and how we conduct the Seder now. So now we don't have the Karban Pesach, so why even mention whoever is in need, let him come and join us for the Karban Pesach? That doesn't make any sense on any level. Having said that, we then go on and say, now we are here, and it seems like it's expressing a wish, next year, in the land of Israel. It seems like, in the sense of we hope that we'll be there. And then we say, now we are slaves, next year, may we be free. That, of course, can be challenged. First of all, what does that have to do with what's been said before? And you could ask the same question, is this only appropriate when we don't have the land? But what about today when we have the land? Or what about a person who's actually living in Israel? Would he say the same thing? Next year in Israel, but he's there right now. I agree that the land of Israel today is not in the ideal situation. But the sentence over here is not talking about an ideal situation. It's simply saying, now we are here, next year in the land of Israel. Mm-hmm. Many times in Jewish history before the exile, when the land of Israel was not in a perfect situation, I say the overwhelming majority of times before the exile, the state of Israel was not a perfect state. It was not a Torah state. There were corrupt kings. There was even idolatry was introduced into the land. It says that now we are slaves, and Lashon Haba Bnei Chorin is also difficult because, as we've said, we're going to be praise Hashem Galano, that God, that's the whole bracha which comes at the conclusion of Magid. Let's take a look at that bracha, the Shevach part. After the recitation of the story, the Shevach part, which leads into Hallel. Therefore we're obligated to all manner of praises to God who did all these miracles for us, who took us out of slavery to freedom, and so on and so forth, from Shibud to Geula, from enslavement to redemption. And then the bracha which is before the second cup is Asher Galanu, who redeemed us and our fathers from Egypt and brought us to this night to eat matzah and maror. The whole theme is that God took us out of slavery to freedom. So therefore, what are we starting off by saying now we are slaves? It's contradictory to the entire night. So we're going to be reading the notes from the Haggadah called Siach HaGrid, which has the commentary of Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, Zichron Levracha. I don't think he wrote the commentary. My sense is that this was gleaned by his students and put together by them. Halach Ma'anya, I'm reading the commentary, which is attributed to the Rav. HaRambam Ba'Haggadah, the Rambam and his Haggadah, Go Race, has a different version, which adds three words. Bibahilu Yatzano Mimitzrayim, Halach Ma'anya. In great haste, Bahala is more than haste, but in a... Halah usually refers to like a tumultuous state, when there's a tumult. In a state of haste, tremendous haste, we went out of Egypt. Halach Ma'anya, this is the bread of affliction. The beer, Mahusaf HaRambam Mazeh. What did the Rambam add with this? Umau Hem Shechadvarim Laha Lach Ma'anya. And what is the connection between saying that we left in great haste, and Halach Ma'anya? What does one thing have to do with the other? V'hinei Matzino B'matza Shnei Inyanim. And we find in matza two ideas. Matza Nikres Lechem Ani. Matza is called poor bread, or I commonly translate the bread of affliction. Kolomar Avdus V'shibud. Slavery and subordination. Kimavua Barashi, as explained by Rashi. V'zelashono, and this is Rashi's language, Lechem Oni, Lechem Shemaskir Es Ha'oni Shenitano B'Mitzrayim. It is the bread which calls to mind, which calls us to remember the affliction that we experienced in Mitzrayim, in Egypt. Ad Kam L'Shono. End of quote. Mitzad Sheni, on the other hand, Mavua B'Mishnah the Rabban Gamliel. It is explained in the Mishnah of Rabbi Gamliel. The Matzah that matzah is with regard to the fact that we were redeemed from Egypt. So matzah seems to be ambivalent. It's a signification of two extremes, freedom and slavery. Contradiction in terms. Mitzad echad shibud v'yoni u'mitzad sheni ge'ula. V'chakas of lehedi haramban al Torah. And the Ramban may, if you want to see, in the same source that he quoted above, that's Devarim 17:3, the Ramban explains that as well. And we find in the Mishnah, the Matzahi al Shem Shenigalu. That Matzah is because of the Geula. The Alzem Maisei Mishnah Hakra, the Chi Pazon. And with regard to this, the Mishnah adduces, brings down the pasuk of Chipazon, that the idea of matzah as geula has to do with the phenomenon of Chipazon, that the Jews left in a great hurry, in a great rush. Umizem avuar, and from this it's explained, to hod the matzah hi al shem shenigalu, and that the reference of matzah as an expression of redemption, hainimishum, is because because the redemption was with tremendous haste. It came upon them very suddenly and very quickly. Hispik b'tzekam shel avosenu lahachmitz. And the dough of our fathers did not have sufficient time to become leavened. The tekef umiyad ga'olam HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'lo shehiyah. And immediately and quickly, God redeemed them without any delay. The question I would ask at this point is that why did they leave? Why was it such a surprise and in such a hurry when Moshe had told them in advance about Makas Bechorah? Mm-hmm. Moshe described to them what was going to take place. God tells Moshe about the Korban Pesach, and then in Yud Beis, 12:12, God says, "I will pass through the land of Egypt on this night, and I will smite every firstborn, from man to animal, and with all the gods of Egypt I will enact judgments." But this blood will be for you as a sign on the houses that you're there, and I'll see the blood and I'll skip over you. And you will not experience the destructive plague when I smite Egypt. And this day shall be a remembrance for you, and you'll celebrate this day. So everything is being told to them in advance. Moshe called the elders of Israel and told them to take the sheep and to slaughter the Pesach. This is on the first day of the month. So they had a couple of weeks. 2 weeks before the Exodus, they were told about that V'yavar Hashem, Lingofetz and Zayim. Again, now Moshe tells them that God will, so to speak, pass through to smite Egypt, and God will see the blood, and God will skip over the house, and will not allow the destroyer into your houses to destroy. And you shall guard this. This will be a holiday which you'll commemorate forever and ever. So here you're talking about the redemption. That is the case, it would seem, that the Jews knew about the impending redemption 2 weeks in advance. In fact, they were told to prepare, in the sense they were told to go and ask the Egyptians for garments, for the gold, for the vessels. I'm not sure about the vessel, I'm saying klezav, yeah, vessels. Vessels, jewelry. And the Egyptians were extremely generous to them, because God placed the favor, the chain of the people in the eyes of the Egyptians, and they were bountiful to them. All this would seem to indicate preparation and foreknowledge, so then why couldn't they prepare the food as well? What's the idea that they had to leave in a hurry, as though they had no clue? In Lamed Hey it says that Bnei Yisrael also kizvah Moshe. The Jews did as Moshe had said, and they requested from the Egyptians vessels of silver, vessels of gold, and clothing. So they did prepare. Now let's take a look at Yud Beis Lamed Zayin, when it describes the fact that the Jews did leave Egypt, that they left from Ramses to Sukkos, 600,000 men, aside from the children, and then a mixed multitude went with them, and much animals, all the animals went with them. Lama Tess is the crucial pasuk. It says, and they baked the dough that they removed from Egypt, cakes of matzah, because it did not leaven. Then it gives the reason why. Kigoshim in Mitzrayim, because they were driven out of Egypt, lo yochel is a man, they couldn't wait. And also provision they didn't make for themselves. So here it's telling you that when they left Egypt, they didn't have time to make provisions. This seems to contradict the fact that they were told 2 weeks in advance. I think there's an important lesson to be learned over here, and it's something which is very relevant today. Because even in that situation, and even with all the advance notice that something big is going to happen, the Jews did not fall into the trap of trying to second-guess the Creator, trying to project how the Creator was going to operate. That's something which can't be said of all Jews today. There's all these messianic movements, and then there's people in Israel, the redemption. Everybody knows exactly the agenda. Everybody's predicting exactly what's going to happen. But you see from this that there's no way that anybody can really know, unless God has revealed specifically to a prophet. But other than that, there's no way that a person can predict the way in which God's plan is going to unfold in a specific kind of way. They knew that the end was near, but apparently they didn't know how near and in what way. It meant that this would be a crushing blow. This would be the ultimate blow, the crushing blow. But to say that they'd be leaving on that very night, that apparently they were not told. Because if they were told, then they would have prepared. They knew that that would be a night of devastation, and that that would be the beginning of the end, but how do you know when the end is going to happen? It could take days, it could take weeks, it could take months. So they were assured of the fact that this would be the end. But then to go from there and to say, I know exactly how it's going to be, I know exactly how it's going to unfold, that they didn't do. They never occurred to them that on that very night, the entire system of power would fall apart, and he not only would he give them permission, but come after them and actually drive them out of the land. That they never anticipated. And they weren't told to anticipate that. Because you could ask a question. Why did it have to be this way? Why weren't they told? And they would have prepared. But apparently it was the will of God to reveal a certain amount to them. And the rest, wait and see. Wait and see how it unfolds. Not every aspect of the plan was revealed to them in advance. Nor did they have any right to assume. When it happened, that's it. Unfortunately, people don't act that way today. Everybody's involved in messianic fervor, and everybody's involved in all kinds of specifics and predictions. It's trying to... It has an element of idolatry to it, because you're assuming that you know exactly how God's system is going to work out. I mean, that's absurd. I mean, it's basically your own fantasy of how it ought to be. But if you knew your place in the scheme of things, you wouldn't go one iota beyond what we know. This is what we know. Do we know that the modern state of Israel is the beginning of the redemption and how it's going to unfold? No, we don't know. We hope, but we don't know. But people can't resist, and that's a certain type of egotism. To put yourself in a position where you claim that you know exactly how it's... And of course it's going to unfold because of you and your time and affecting your movement. It's the height of egotism to make yourself the center of the universe, that the redemption has to revolve around me, somehow it has to affect me. That they were not told to prepare, therefore it wouldn't make sense to actually prepare the provisions. They didn't prepare the bread, and they didn't prepare provisions, the food, because that's something that you prepare that usually at the last minute. You don't prepare that because it can spoil. So that they refrained from doing because they weren't told to do so. In my opinion, that's a good thing. And that would resolve the contradiction. That the Bahilu, that they left in a state of Bahala, in a state of tremendous haste, without really being told in advance. Other than that, in general, they were told in general that the Geula was coming, but in terms of specifics, in terms of the particularities or the exact moment, that they weren't told. Now we're up to the part of Kol Dezrich Yesei V'Yifsach, which means that whoever is in need, let him come and join us for the Korban Pesach. And the questions, of course, we asked are, first of all, what does it have to do with the Halach Ma'anya? How does it fit into the concept of Halach Ma'anya? And especially, I think it's relevant that we say this even now when we don't have the Korban Pesach. And as we pointed out, if you take a look at the Rambam, you'll see that at the time when there's a Korban Pesach, the Manishtana would change, would reflect the fact that there's the Korban Pesach. So we don't conduct our Seder now as though, as we would, indeed, if we were in the time of the Beis HaMikdash and we had the Korban Pesach, things would be different. Our Seder now commemorates certain things, but it's reflective of the fact that we're not. Of course, that's clear in the very next phrase. Now we are slaves, next year may we be free. Now we're here, next year in the land of Israel. So it's clear that we're aware of the fact that we don't have a... that we're saying the Seder in the context of the exile, and we don't have a Korban Pesach. So why are we saying, whoever is hungry, let him come and join us for the Korban Pesach, whoever is in need, let him join us for the Korban Pesach, when we don't even have a Korban Pesach? You have to take note of the fact that the Korban Pesach is interesting, because you could not just partake of it haphazardly. It had to be through designation. When they slaughtered the Korban, so it had to be designated. And generally speaking, it was designated for groups, although it could be for a yachid, but the general way is that it was for a group. So you had different groups of people joining together for the sake of the particular, to partake of a particular, it's called chabura, a group, for the Korban Pesach. That explains whoever is in need, whoever doesn't have a particular the Korban Pesach. This follows from the idea that we've been developing, that the matzah represents geula, and geula is not for individuals per se. The geula was for the sake of creating an entity of a nation. I think these two ideas go together. So on the first level, the recognition that you belong to a group or to a family expressed itself in terms of practical assistance that you give, which is tzedakah. That's the first expression. But the next idea, and it's what really unifies us, the factor which unifies us in truth, is not the ordinary feelings, that emotions that people of the same family, that is the identification, the nationalistic identification that binds people together. That's not the ultimate element in Klal Yisrael, but the ultimate element in Klal Yisrael is the fact that we perform mitzvos together. That's exactly what the Rambam said, the Rambam that I read to you about Poresh Midachei Tzibur. He's back to Hilchos Tshuva Paragimel, and he says that even though he doesn't do Averos, listen carefully, Ela Nivdal Me'adas Yisrael, but he is separated from the congregation of Israel, the Eina Osa Mitzvos Bechlalon, and he does not do mitzvos together with them. So that's the ultimate separation. Then he goes on to mention other things, that he's not involved in their sorrows or their joys. That's identification, practical identification. But the idea of mentioning whoever is in need, it has relevance for us today. The real need that Jewish people have is the need to be involved in mitzvos and in Torah. That's the real objective. That there aren't many Jews that view their identification, that they're Jewish, in a purely nationalistic sense, like Israel. They want to be part of the Jewish people. And that's good. That's correct. But the recognition has to be that the essence of being Jewish and the factor that really creates the klal is the element of mitzvot. And the Korban Pesach is unique in that, because that's a mitzvah which is not accidentally, you could do it separately or you could do it together, but it's designated to be done bichlal in communities, in groups. So that's why it's very, very relevant over here. It's perfect to remind ourselves that the essence of this people that God established and the relationship that we're supposed to have with fellow Jews is on two levels, on the practical level of rendering assistance, but the highest level is in terms of doing mitzvot. That the purpose of the tzibur is to get together, and it becomes a tzibur only by virtue of the fact that they're doing mitzvot together. What creates the tzibur, the Adas Yisrael, is really the mitzvot, performing of mitzvot. Simply getting together, 10 Jews get together for no halachic purpose, is not really the ultimate tzibur. Like if Fitz is saying is correct, that the mitzvah which expresses this most clearly would be the Korban Pesach, because that's actually the mitzvah which was the beginning of the Geula process, which separated themselves. Mishkul Kuchu. The process of separation, the process of forming a nation, begins with the Korban Pesach. Let's take a look at Shemos at the beginning of Yud Beis, where Moshe gives the command to the Jewish people to prepare the Korban Pesach. The 10th day they were supposed to set aside the sheep. And then it says that in Vav it says, and it should be, you should guard it until the 14th. So they were supposed to set it aside, take it on the 10th, and keep it in a guarded state until the 14th. So what does that mean, keep it in a guarded state? What's that referring to? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi on Vav. V'hoyelachem l'mishmeres. Zeh loshon bikur. It's an expression of inspection, visiting. Actually, bikur cholim, to visit the sick. Sheton bikur mimum aboyamim kodem shchita. It required inspection. That is, for 4 days, when it says l'mishmeres, it means that they had to keep inspecting it to make sure that it did not come up with any kind of a mum, a blemish, which would disqualify it from being used. And now Rashi is asking a question. Why was there a mitzvah to precede the taking of it 4 days before the actual slaughter of it? Mashal otziva came the Pesach Doros, which was not commanded in the Pesach Zoros, that is in the mitzvah of Pesach, which came into being for the generations. So this is not, this idea that you have to take it 4 days and guard it for 4 days before you actually slaughter it on the 14th is not part of the regular mitzvah. It's not part of the ongoing. The Pesach Zoros means the ongoing mitzvah. This is specific to Mitzrayim. So Rashi is asking why. Hey, Rav Masya ben Cheresh Omer. So Rav Masya ben Cheresh explains. Harei Omer, it says, Ve'evor alayich ve'erech. And I passed over you and I saw you. Vihine itcha eis dodim. And behold, the time was a time of love. Higia shvua shenishbati la'avraham. The promise, the oath that I had made to Avram had come, she'egoel as banav, that I would redeem his children. So the time had come. V'lohoya biyadam mitzvos lehis asek vahem. But they didn't have in their hands mitzvos to be involved in. Kidei she'yigalu, in order that they should be redeemed. Yet, without mitzvos, they couldn't be redeemed. That mitzvos was a vital component of the redemption, and without mitzvos there is no redemption. In spite of the fact that the time for the fulfillment of the oath had come, they were lacking something which would prevent them from being redeemed. And what was that? That was mitzvos. Shenemar, as it says, V'at Aaron V'Eria. Now we read that in the Haggadah. This quote that you were naked and bare is something which we say in the Haggadah in the part of Vayered Mitzrayim, Onos al Pi Adibur. It's a pasuk from Yecheskel. When I passed by you and saw you weltering in your blood, I said to you, in your blood live. In your blood live. You repeat that. I will cause you to increase like the plant of the field. And you did increase. It's a reference to what took place to the Jews when they were in Mitzrayim. And you did increase and grow big, and you came to possess great attractions. Your breasts were firm, your hair was grown, and yet you were poorly clad and bare. So what does that mean? That means to say that physically they had matured, they had developed, everything was in place, but yet they were naked. They were naked. In what sense were they naked? So Chazal say, in terms of the mitzvos. V'at Aaron V'Eria. What that means that in Mitzrayim the Jews went through a transformation. In order to become a nation they had to go through a physical transformation. That's what it says, that God saw that everything was firmly developed. But they were naked because there's the essential dimension of this nation is the element of being involved in the true ideas, which comes about through the performance of the mitzvos. So in the Nasa Lahem Shtei mitzvos. And God gave them two mitzvos, Dam Pesach v'Dam Mila, the blood of the Pesach and the blood of Mila, of circumcision. Shemalu b'yoso alayla, they circumcised on that night. Shenema misposes es b'damayich, b'shnei damim, means that they were wallowing in their blood, two bloods. And then it says like this, v'shehayu shtufim Biavodas kochavim. They were also mired in idolatry. Amar lahem, he said to them, Mishchu ukuchu lachem. Pull and take to yourself. Mishchu ukuchu. Pull and take. Mishchu yedechem meavodas kochavim. Pull your hands from. Remove yourself from avodas kochavim. Ukuchu lachem and take. Tzaun shel mitzvah. A sheep of mitzvah. You see that the Korban Pesach is very unique. It was given to them in Mitzrayim because up until that point they really didn't have the elements of being a nation. They were no different than anybody else. They were steeped in idolatry. Except, see, from a physical standpoint, they were separated from the Egyptians, because the Egyptians looked down upon them. They were downtrodden. So they were able to form as a separate unit. But that's not what's the essence of Klal Yisrael. The essence of Klal Yisrael was only when they were able to separate themselves on the level of how they would live their life, how they'd relate to God. And that's Mishkul Kichum. So that was accomplished, that was the entire purpose of the Korban Pesach. That, in point of fact, God said that he'll pass over on that night, and I will see the, for example, Ver'isiyas Adam, and I will see the blood, and I'll skip over you. And therefore, the implicate, there won't be the plague to destroy. Meaning that if you didn't have the blood, then the plague would affect you. So this was essential. Meaning, anyone who did not separate himself from the Mitzrayim would be considered to be part of the Mitzrayim, whether he was Jewish or not Jewish, as long as he lived according to that philosophy. But only those who separated themselves by virtue of what? Of the mitzvos. Of course, the question arises, and I've asked it many times, where was the blood? Where was the blood sprinkled? On the inside or on the outside? Gimel is an interesting pasuk. It says, V'haya ha'dam lachem la'os, and the blood will be for you as a sign. Ala batim asher atem sham, in the houses where you are. V'ra'isi es adam, and I will see the blood, u'pasachti aleichem, and I'll skip over you. V'lo yevachem negaf l'mashchas, and there will not be a plague to destroy. V'hakosi v'yaris Mitzrayim, when I smite the land of Mitzrayim. So now, who is the blood for? It seems to be ambivalent. On the one hand, it seems to be for God. Not that God needs it, but the way the pasuk describes it, I will see it. On the other hand, it says the blood will be a sign for you. So which is it? So let's take a look at Rashi. V'hoya adam lachem la'os. Lachem la'os, for you as a sign, v'lo la'acherim la'os, and not for others. Mikan shelo nitnu hadam ela mibifnim. From here we deduce that the blood was placed on the inside. There are ECS Adam. What does that mean? Hakol Goler Lefonav. Everything is known to him. Elo Amra Kadosh Baruch Hu. But God said, No sein ani es enai. I turn my attention. Liros she'atem asukim b'mitzvosai. That you are osuk, involved, immersed in my mitzvos uposeach ani aleichem, and I skip over you. Meaning to say that there's no special magical quality, that the blood was a protection, as many, many people today would have that kind of a concept. They sprinkle the blood's a protection, and so on and so forth. I could just see, in a sense, it's probably better that we don't have the Korban Pesach right now. In a sense, that given the mental attitude, people would save parts of the blood and put it in little bottles and take it around with them, because the blood is some kind of a protection. You see from this passage that there is no such thing as a protection. Blood, which the Torah depicts as sort of warding off this plague, in reality, is nothing in the blood. It's only in the individual. The only protection is in the state of the individual, because he's involved in mitzvos, and that draws him close to God, and that's the only protection you can have. But there's nothing in the physical object per se. That's even in a case where the Torah is describing it that way. How much more so in cases where the Torah doesn't attribute any types of protective quality to it. That is the idolatrous mentality. The Korban Pesach, therefore, is the perfect illustration of the concept of what this Geula is all about. It's the forming of a new nation, and the essence, that nation is not a nationalistic, is not a physical entity, because they had reached that stage. The time had come, they had reached the stage, all the physical components of nations were there, but they were not roy, they were not fit for redemption, because they were lacking the element of being involved in mitzvot. So this is the essence. This is the essence of Klal Yisrael, is mitzvot, and whoever negates mitzvot negates Klal Yisrael. We say that by the Arba Avonim. And the Rasha is the one who says, Mohav Odozos Lachem. What does that mean? He's just talking about, he's denigrating the mitzvah, saying it has no objective significance, and therefore what do we say? Hotiyasat from a klal. He removes himself from the klal. If you negate mitzvahs, you're not part of Klal Yisrael, because there is no Klal Yisrael without mitzvahs. All groups that negate mitzvahs are negating Klal Yisrael. You can't have that. You can't have any identity. There's no Jewish identity with any group, any branch of Judaism which negates the mitzvahs. Specifically, I'm referring to the Reform, in a sense to the conservative. because there is no idea of a Jewish people in a purely nationalistic sense. It's only, the only thing which unites us and which gives us our identity is the mitzvot. To conclude, Pesach Mitzrayim is the perfect vehicle, because not only is it a mitzvah, but it's the mitzvah which was responsible for transforming us from a physical entity into Klal Yisrael, which is a metaphysical entity which whose whole identity is centered around the performance of mitzvot. And that's for Isias Adam, God says. It's only because you're usuk in mitzvot, that's why you're spared. And that's the oath to you, that you shouldn't think that you're saved because you're somehow superior to the mitzvah. In fact, it says that the command was that nobody was permitted to leave their house that entire night. And Ishal Yetzu Mipesach Beso, the Jews were not permitted to leave that entire night. They had to stay indoors. So, to me, it seems because of the oath. I think the Ramban states this point, that that's part of the mitzvah of the Dam. Now, my explanation is that it's dangerous to go around. It could produce a negative attitude. A person can have a false sense of superiority when everybody around him is being killed and he's saved. And then there's always this childish narcissism that he attaches it to, that God loves us. And that's something that the Jews always have to be on guard against, that we shouldn't feel that we are superior. See, there's two extremes that the Jews have to guard against. There are those who feel that they're inferior and they worship the nations and they just want to show how the Jews can do everything that the rest of the nations can do. That's because they're not rooted in Torah, because they don't see the superiority of Torah. So they feel looked down upon. Then amongst the others, there are those who have the counter feeling of feeling superior, that we're, the religious Jews have a tendency to feel superior. We're the chosen ones. God chose us. He didn't choose you. There must be a reason. Oh, because we're superior. And then you have all these ideas of a special Jewish soul, and a Jewish soul is different than a non-Jewish soul, and so on and so forth. But the Dam Lachem La'os is a reminder that there's nothing inherently superior, but adherence to the system of mitzvos raises you to the level at which you're worthy of God's recognition, of God relating to you, and nothing else. I'd like to move on to the next element in the Halach Manya. When we say Hashata Avdi, now we are slaves, L'shan Hava B'nei Choren, and next year may we be free. That's extremely problematical, because the entire theme of the night is Cheros. Everything is done derech Cheros, and we drink 4 cups of wine because of freedom. And each person is supposed to envision himself as though he was in Egypt and he was freed. And the entire concept of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Exodus, is that it's not just for that generation, but for all subsequent generations, that the Jews were freed in a permanent kind of a way. That's Geula. So how can you combine the idea of Geula with the idea that now we are slaves? Tefillah itself seems to reflect the ambivalence, because we say in the Hashkivenu in Ma'ariv, when it talks about the fact that God took us out of Mitzrayim, it says Hamaka b'Yevraso kol b'chorim Mitzrayim, that God smote in his anger all of the firstborn of Egypt, v'yotzei es amo Yisrael mitocham, and he moved his nation Israel from amongst them, l'cheiros olam, to eternal freedom. That would indicate that we are, every generation is free. However, in the Shmona Esrei, we say, Tekavish of a Gadol, to sound the great shofar, L'cheirusenu, for our freedom, which is a reference to the tefillah of the Mashiach. The Mashiach will come and free us. L'cheirusenu. So on the one hand, we're saying that we are free. On the other hand, we're praying so we'll become free. It seems to be a bit of a contradiction. I would differentiate between a situation of freedom and being in a state of freedom. Is that the God gave us the Torah is the situation of freedom. That once God removed us from Mitzrayim and gave us the Torah, so the potential for freedom exists. The situation for freedom exists. And that will never be changed. That's eternal. And it has existed in all times and in all places for those people who grasp onto it. Eitz Chaim Hi L'machazikim Ba. It's a tree of life for those who seize onto it. And there's different levels at which you could seize onto it, but it's something which doesn't happen naturally, even if you're observant. Observance of the mitzvos is a precondition But in order to really be in a state of freedom, you have to go through a complete transformation of the personality. And that certain individuals are capable of doing. That's different levels. Different levels. And certain individuals are capable of doing it. But we're concerned on the night of Pesach in terms of the national level. We're not talking about an individual. I'm not talking about myself. Not to say that I don't mean myself. Me. The individual is not talking about himself. And even the greatest individual, the Vilna Gaon, would say the same thing, who certainly was in a state of freedom. Because this is, we're now referring to the state that we find ourselves in as a nation. That's Holach Ma'anya. We're talking about Geula. And Geula means to create a certain type of a nation. A nation which is on the level of the true ideas and the ultimate ideals, and has the appropriate concept of how to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and God is with us. That's what the Geula phenomenon is all about. So you cannot help but reflect, where do we stand now vis-a-vis that ideal of what this night is all about? You can't help but reflect upon that. And you, when you reflect upon that, you reflect upon it from the standpoint of the nation. And the nation is Avdi. The nation is in a state of Avdus. Because, what type of an Avdus is this? We're not talking about physical avdus, by the way. Because when we say that God took us out to eternal freedom, we don't mean eternal freedom in a physical sense, because the Jews have been oppressed, have been persecuted, have been enslaved many times. That's irrelevant. We're talking about true freedom. That it refers to the fact of the Jewish people. This is what we're talking about. That this nation will become corrupted through Avodah Zarah, and as a result of that, they will be destroyed from the land. They will be exiled. That's exactly the thing that we're talking about. That's the Hashaka. The state that we are in right now. We have to reflect upon the national state that we're in right now. Take a look at Pesach of Zion. V'heifetz Hashem eschem ba'amim, and God will disperse you amongst the nations. V'nishartem m'seim mispar, and you will remain a smaller number, ba'gayim, amongst the nations, asher yinahig et Hashem eschem shama, that God will lead you there. Now look at Kav Ches. Vavadatem Sham Elohim, and you will worship there God's Maase Yidei Adam, the works of man's hands. Eitz for Evan, wood and stone that you have not seen, that do not see and do not hear and do not eat and do not breathe. This pasuk always troubled me, because when did we find that the Jews in the exile actually worshipped Avodah Zarah? To the contrary, generally, by and large, even when they were threatened with death, most of the Jews always refused to convert and preferred to die. It seems in that respect, the Jewish people were loyal. But where do we find the Jews doing this? Rashi, Vavaratem Shem Elohim, Misha'atem ovdim lovdehem, since you serve their servers, the worshippers, your slaves to the worshippers, ki'ilu atem ovdim lahem, it's as though you're worshipping their gods. It means you're subservient to the nations. And since you're subservient to them, that state of subservience means that you feel inferior and you naturally identify with them, and you're, here it's not worshipping in the sense of idolatry. It's the ultimate idolatry of the false philosophy, the value system. Everybody's caught up in the hedonistic value system, which is the ultimate idolatry. So as Injun says in the pasuk, Maase Yidei Adam. Why does it have to mention that? The works of man's hands. Because that's the idolatry of today, the deification of man. You're caught up in the works of man's hands. That the physical, materialism, wealth, industry, buildings, and so forth. That's the idolatry of today. And since we're in the exile, it's an impossibility to be totally free because you're caught up in this false philosophy. That's what we're saying in the Hashata Avdi. That if we reflect upon the true state of Geula, it's a tragedy. Because we're supposed to be a free people, and we're supposed to be the people that reflect the true ideas, and everybody else is supposed to be subservient to us. And learn in the sense of learning the true ideas from us. in the sense that Doug Taylor mentioned when he said, you're supposed to be the teachers. We're supposed to be the ones to learn from you. Yeah, he's the one individual that recognizes it. So both ideas are true, that when God gave us the Torah, God placed us in a situation of cheiros. And each person can partake of that situation of cheiros as an individual. And that depends upon the extent to which he not only performs the mitzvos technically, but internalizes the ideas and the philosophy of the mitzvos. So to the extent that he does that, he transforms himself from the world of false ideas into the world of true ideas. So to that extent, he's becoming free. But we're talking here tonight not about the particular individual. We're talking about the state of the nation. And the state of the nation is in a state of avdus, because we're in a state of golos, because we did not relate to the true ideas, and we chose to follow the ideas of the nations, which is enslavement to idolatry, and that's why we were put in a state of exile. So that's a tragic element in terms of Klal Yisrael. To be in a state of avdus, enslavement to false ideas, that if we have the Torah at our disposal and we're not accessing it, we're not fulfilling the objective of Halach Ma'anya. We're choosing to go back into a state of slavery. Actually, I skipped over one phrase, but it all fits together now. Hashata Hacha, now we are here, Lashon Haba B'Arad Yisrael. And next year, may we be in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Turns out that there's one concept over here, but it's broken up into two components. The final step is the cheres. The first step is the land. Just like in Mitzrayim, the first step was to break away. To break away from the false ideas of Mitzrayim. Here too, we're steeped in the false ideas of America, and nobody wants to leave. Nobody wants to separate themselves. Not that Israel today represents the ultimate, but even so, it's a start. But people want to stay here, just like many Jews wanted to stay in Mitzrayim, and the only reason they left was due to the pressure, that the pressure became too great, and the Mitzrayim actually drove them out. They really didn't have any choice but to leave. So the ultimate freedom has to be with a recognition of the fact that this is not a good thing to be in. The reason why we don't want to leave America is because we love it, because we love being in this state of enslavement. We like the fact that we're surrounded by the materialism. We like the fact that we're surrounded by fashion and all of the arts and all of this philosophy. No matter how much the life of wealth, the life of competitiveness, no matter how much people criticize it, but they love it. So we want to be slaves. So that's what Halach Ma'anya is about, Geula. And when you reflect upon the state that you're in vis-a-vis Geula, you have to be open and honest and admit that you are here, and you're here by choice. You want to be here. And it doesn't begin until you leave, until you decide to separate yourself and to attach yourself to something different. So on the first level, that's got to be a special land, the land of Israel. That's step number one. And in line with that is the idea, the reason for wanting to do that has to be because you recognize that here you are a slave. Not because there are many Jews that will go to Israel. In fact, the overwhelming majority of the Jews who built up the state of Israel have nothing to do with religion. Israel was not built up by any religious concept of freedom. It was built up by purely secular ideas of secular nationalism. So the truth is that most of the religious people and thinkers were opposed to Israel and Zionism at the time. Now that it's a success, everybody's on board. But the Halach Ma'anya is saying that the objective should be because of the true idea of Eretz Yisrael, which is to create a society which is founded upon different concepts, the metaphysical ideas, and not the ideas of the nations, not to go there and incorporate the false philosophies of the Western world. That's the Halach Ma'anya. All this, as Tamar is pointing out, all this is expressed in Mincha on Shabbos, the Shemoneh Esrei, when we say Ata Echad, that you are one. It's a recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'Shimcha Echad, which means that it's not just that there's one God, but we have a concept of the unity of God, that God is different. And